We are doing the book of Shoftim, and we had learned about Avimelech. We had learned how Avimelech had this internal struggle, and ultimately he was killed by his own men. And then we had learned about, after Avimelech, there was a judge named Tola ben Pua. We don't know much about him. And then Yair HaGiladi, we don't know much about him. We know he was very wealthy. And then the Jews continue sinning. They go after idols, and God gives them over to the hands of the Plishtim and the Ammonites. And they really, really harm us and afflict us. And 18 years, the Jews on the eastern side of the Jordan, right near the Ammonite territory, right? We have the Jews inside Israel, and then we have the 2.5 tribes on the eastern side of the Jordan. And those 2.5 tribes are living right next to enemy territory, right? So they're right next to the Ammonites. So the Ammonites really take control of the eastern side of the Jordan, and the Jews over there are suffering at the hands of the Ammonites. And then the Ammonites come to attack, and they're headed to attacking central Israel, and the Jews call out to Hashem, and Hashem says, look, I helped you out, and you keep leaving me. Go to the gods that you've chosen. If you keep leaving me, why do you come to me now? And the Jews say, we've sinned, help us out. They stop, they remove the idols from their midst. The Ammonites have gathered in Gilad. They've gathered on the eastern side of the Jordan. First they're going to attack the nations there. And the people of Gilad, the people of that territory, they say, we need someone to help us. We should start the fight. We shouldn't let them, they destroy us. Then they continue to proceed to conquer the rest of Israel. We have to have a leader to lead us to battle against them. And previously, years earlier, there was a man by the name of Gilad who lived over there in the territory of Gilad. And he had a wife and he had children. And he also had a Pilegesh, a woman who he wasn't completely married to. They chose to live together, and halachically there used to be such an agreement that a couple could have, that they live together, they don't fulfill a complete marriage, but they do a partial marriage. They get married, but with the condition that if they want to break up the marriage, they don't have to pay, they don't have to do ksuba. It's a partial communion. It's what's called halachically pilegesh. Pilegesh, we saw the Rebbe from Slonim says, comes from the word plag isha, like half a wife. Plag, half, isha, a wife, pilegesh. So he has a child from this woman named Yiftach. And when the children grow up, so the kids from his primary wife chase away Yiftach, and they say, you shouldn't inherit the territory together with us. Now, halachically, they were wrong. He had a right. He was the son of Yiftach, just like they. And the elders didn't help him out. So Yiftach ran away, and he started a gang. And he had this massive gang, and he had a bunch of massive people with him. So now, when the Jews are in duress, they say, who can lead us to war? They say, oh, Yiftach, him and his men. So the elders go out to Yiftach, and they tell Yiftach, help us, we want you to be our general to lead us in battle against the Ammonites. So Yiftach tells them, hey, you guys hated me. You were part of the plot to chase me out of my father's house. Now that you're in a tight spot, you're calling me to help you out. Why are you coming to me now? So the elders say, yeah, that's why we've come to you, because we're in a tight spot. So come with us, win the war, and we'll make you the leader of all the Gilad territory. So Yiftach says, if you bring me back and I win the war, of course I'm king. What do you mean? You need to give me such a promise that you'll make me king? Of course if I win the war, I'm king. If you really were decent people, you should say you're going to make me king now and then I'll lead you to war. That's not what you're saying. You're saying if I come back and I win the war, then you'll give me the throne. Oh, very nice. So the elders say, fine, God should be witness that we'll do as you wish. Now notice the difference between Yiftach and Gidon. When Gidon succeeded already in having a tremendous victory, saving the Jewish people, and the Jews offered him the throne, And they said, Meloch banu, Meshol banu gamata, gam bincha, gam ben benecha. You be king over us, your son, your grandson. What did Gidon say? No, I won't be king. My son won't be king. My grandson won't be king. God is your king. Gidon isn't interested in taking a position. Gidon saved the Jewish people after he's proven himself. He still says, why, I should be your king. God is your king. And he takes a tzanua, he takes a humble position. Yiftach hasn't yet done a thing. He's only said, you know what, you need me, so pay me. You need me, give me leadership. He hasn't yet proven himself. And yet, we see already here that Yiftach is a tough person. So, tough. He doesn't seem to be as refined as Gidon. Gidon was, he had the traits we would like to see in a leader. Gidon isn't interested in taking leadership. All our great leaders ran away from leadership, starting with Moshe Rabbeinu. God doesn't go lead the Jewish people out of Egypt. He spends 7 days arguing, no, I'm not fit, send someone else, send my brother, send someone else, don't send me. All our great leaders tried to shun the position of leadership. Yiftach is not going in their footsteps. So Yiftach agrees, and the nation appoints him as their leader, the people of Gilad, and Yiftach sets out their deal before God. He goes to this large place where all the Jews are present, and he spreads out the deal before them. And now that Yiftach is their leader, so he sends word to the king of Ammon. And he tells the king of Ammon, what are you doing coming to fight us? This is our territory. So the king of Ammon says, no, I'm not interested in any war. But you guys took my territory. So let's review history a little bit. And this is what Yiftach is going to answer him. The king of Ammon says, when you guys left Egypt, the eastern side of the Jordan, a large part of that territory was mine. And you guys took that land, give it back to me, and fine, we'll have peace. And Yiftach tells him, no, that's not what happened. When we left Egypt, so we sent messengers, we wanted to pass through Edom territory, Moabite territory, and no one wanted to let us go through. You guys didn't let us go into the land of Israel. And we made this long journey surrounding Edomite territory, Moabite territory, and we passed the border of Moabite territory because God really forbade us to fight the Moabites. And then we came to the territory of Sihon, the Emori king. Not Ammon, not Moab, but Emori, the king of Cheshbon, the city of Cheshbon. And we asked him to pass through his land to enter the land of Israel. And then Sihon attacked us. And when Sihon attacked us, so we destroyed his armies and we conquered his territory. And all the land that you want was part of Sihon's territory. Now, historically, before we fought the war against Sihon, a few years earlier, Sihon had fought a war against Moab, and really he had taken that territory from Moab. But what Yiftach is saying is, we never took the land from you. We took the land from Sihon. He took it from you. God didn't let us take any of your territory. God told us, don't attack Ammon and Moab. Don't take any of their territory. Now, when we came to the scene, this wasn't your territory. We took the territory that belonged to Sihon. Sihon attacked us. When we won the war against Sihon, we took his territory. You have no claim against us. And anyways, he says, where have you been the last few hundred years? It's been over 300 years. Now you wake up and you say, 300 years ago, when you guys won Sihon, you took my territory. What are you coming with a claim like that now? Where you been for 300 years? So Yiftach tells him, look, we've done nothing wrong to you, but you are doing something that is very wrong to us. You're coming to fight us for no good reason. And Hashem should judge between us and you. So the king of Ammon doesn't listen, and God helps Yiftach. Yiftach has a heavenly spirit, and he takes his troops and he attacks the Ammonites. He doesn't wait for them to come to us. And as he attacks, he takes a vow. And he says, God, if you give the Ammonites in my hand, so then the first thing that greets me when I come back from war, I will give it over to Hashem. I will sacrifice it completely to you, Hashem, is an Ola sacrifice. An Ola sacrifice is a sacrifice that gets completely burned. So Yiftach attacks Ammon, and he destroys them, 20 cities. And the Ammonites are completely defeated. And then Yiftach heads home. And he's on his way home, and his daughter goes out to greet him. And he's married a woman that this is her second marriage. And the only child that he's had from this woman is this daughter. The only child he had, this was his only daughter. And the daughter heard how her father won the war. So she takes out her tambourine and she goes out dancing to greet her father. He won the war. So she's the welcoming party. When Yiftach sees her, so he took a vow. The first thing that greets him when he comes home from the war will be sacrificed to God. So Yiftach tears his clothes and he weeps and he tells his daughter, "My daughter, it's as though you've cursed me. I've taken a vow that the first thing that greets me I will sacrifice before God. I cannot go back on that." And his daughter says, "Dad, you've taken the vow. Do what you vowed. But Hashem, now that Hashem has given you such a gift, He let you avenge the war against Ammon, but do me a favor. Give me 2 months and let me go to the mountains and weep over the fact that I'm never going to marry. Let me weep with my friends." And he lets her go for 2 months, and she weeps. And at the end of the 2 months, so the Navi says she came back, and her father fulfilled his vow with her. What does that mean? What did he do? Yeah. What would be the point? Okay, I don't know. Probably he thought it would be an animal, and he probably knew that ordinarily one of his animals greeted him. That's probably what was going on in his mind. Gemara and Tanis, yeah. Right? Okay. So, Chazal have different understandings as to what went on here. Chazal tell us one very, very important rule we learn from here. Lo am haaretz chasid. A person who is not learned cannot be pious. Yiftach thinks at this moment that he is doing the greatest act of piety. Either Yiftach took his daughter and locked her up in a house and only brought her food and water and said, "Your job for the rest of your life is to pray to God. You'll be a holy person. All you're doing is praying to God." And he locks her up in a house and just brings her food and drink, and that's her job for the rest of her life, because he's decided that whatever comes to greet him, he will take and make for God. So he can't sacrifice her. So he sacrifices her, and the best way you can sacrifice a human, he locks her up to pray to God, and she agrees. So either that's what Yiftach did, or Yiftach literally gave a human sacrifice. There are two understandings among our sages. Either way, he was in complete error. There's no such concept. We don't offer human sacrifices, and Yiftach could have gone to the rabbis, and the rabbis have the capacity to annul a vow. He could have taken care of the situation. But Yiftach felt, I took a vow, God did his end, I have to do my end. So Yiftach wants to be very pious. So Yiftach fulfills his vow, whatever the meaning is. And Yiftach has paid the price for it. God punished him for what he did. He has no right to do that to his daughter. We have a rule in Halacha that in Adam osel davar sheino shelo, a person cannot make someone else's item prohibited. Meaning, I can't sit here and say, "Oh, I want to give a donation to the temple. That mug, I designated as hekdesh. That mug is given to the temple." Chazal say, even let's say a person would do worse than that. a person would say, that mug from now on, that's my God. I'm going to bow to it, I'm going to pray to it. That's my God, that mug. So we know that Avodah Zarah is Asur Bana. Even that, Chazal say, I can't do that to his mug. I could go cuckoo on my own right, but not on his mug. So Chazal say, "In Adam Osel Davar Sheino Shelo." You can't take someone else's object and make it prohibited. Certainly, Yiftach can't donate his daughter, whichever way it means. And Chazal say that she made all kinds of claims to him, and he had answers to all the claims, and at the end of the day, he didn't go to the rabbis. He decided, I want to be pious, this is what I'm going to do. And here we see a very important concept that people sometimes get confused about. The world seems to say, the important thing is you want to be a good person. You should at least try to be a good person. And in Judaism we say, yes, you have to want to be a good person, but that's not enough. There are actions which are going to be good, and there are actions which are going to be bad. And if all you have is the desire to be good, then you could end up like Yiftach. Yiftach wanted to be a good person. He did the most horrible thing when he wanted to be a good person. The desire to be good just isn't enough. That doesn't cut it. There is something which is right, and there is something which is wrong. And the Torah tells us what is right, and the Torah tells us what is wrong. And if we learn the Torah, then we'll know to be good moral people. And if we won't learn the Torah, then that's what the Navi is telling us. Yiftach didn't learn Torah. So on the one hand, he merited that God gave him a godly spirit. He led the Jews to a tremendous victory. But on the other hand, when it came time to fulfilling his obligations to the Jewish people, to his daughter, he didn't know what was right. So he went with his heart. He said, I owe it to God. I owe it to God. I'm going with my heart. Very good. He ended up killing his daughter. And he got punished for it. So it's not enough just to want to be a good person. That's wrong. It's a good start. We always have to work on our desire. But it's not enough. At the end of the day, there is an action which is right and there's an action which is wrong. And those who are not learned will not hit the nail on the head. They could end up like Yiftach. And it's not only that they don't hit the nail on the head, it's that their desire to do good could sometimes lead them to do the worst things in the world. Because when a person legitimizes what he does by saying, well, I want to do good, so I'm legitimate, I just want to do good, then he could legitimize every abominable act as Yiftach did. So we have to learn from this, what Chazal tell us. Lo am aretz chasid. You cannot be a pious person if you're not learned. You have to learn Torah. Without it, the good desire could lead a person to the worst things in the world. Our sages say a very, very troubling thought here. Our sages say that there were two leaders of the people at this time. Yiftach was the physical leader. He led us to war and he won the war. Pinchas was the spiritual leader. Pinchas was the prophet. Pinchas heard about what Yiftach did. Yiftach knew that Pinchas was around and could annul his vow. So our sages say, Yiftach said, I just won the war. I'm the leader. Pinchas should come to me to annul my vow. Pinchas said, I'm the rabbi. He needs me. He took the vow. It's his daughter. I'm the leader of the Jewish people. Let him come to me. I'm the prophet. Yiftach stayed in his town. Pinchas stayed in his town. Between the two of them, ultimately, Yiftach's daughter was lost. However we understand. Chazal say that God looked down and said, ah, Pinchas, you're not going to him because you're a prophet? No longer prophet. Pinchas lost his prophecy from that moment onward. Pinchas is not a prophet. Yiftach, you're not going to him because you're such a powerful leader? It was declared upon Yiftach that he would die a horrible death, that limb by limb fell off of him. He had a disease, a form of boils, that caused his limbs to literally fall off. He'd travel from city to city. What? It doesn't say it was leprosy. It says it was... I don't know. What? Because Pinchas should have traveled to Yiftach. Pinchas, he should have gone to him to annul his vow. The Navi tells us that there was a custom that 4 days a year the girls would go and lament over Yiftach's daughter. So if she was still alive, they'd go visit her for 4 days a year and weep with her over her lot. If she was dead, so they lamented over what happened to her 4 days a year. Now, if you recall, back when Gideon went to war, the tribe of Ephraim, they had come to Gidon and they had said, why are you going to war without asking us? So Gidon had appeased them. He said, you guys, even though you weren't foretold about this war, you did such an important job in this war. You're the ones who were victorious in this war. You guys are amazing. And when he appeased them, the tribe of Ephraim calmed down. Here we find the same thing happens again. The tribe of Ephraim, so we know that on the eastern side of the Jordan was the tribe of Menashe, Reuven, Gad, and half the tribe of Menashe. And Menashe and Ephraim are really one tribe. And when the tribe of Menashe accepts Yiftach as the leader, the tribe of Ephraim is a little bit troubled. Who's he? Why should we be subservient to Yiftach? So the tribe of Ephraim gathers and comes to Yiftach and they say, why'd you go to war against the Ammonites without us? You're going to war as though you're the leader of the Jewish people. You've endangered all of the Jewish people. How dare you do that? We're going to burn your house on you. And Yiftach says, you know, Ammon has been bugging us for a long time, right? We saw earlier, what was it, 18 years that the Jews were subservient to the Ammonites? So Yiftach tells them, it's been years that we've had trouble with the Ammonites, and you guys never came to help us out. And now, 18 years. And now, I've seen that you guys don't come to help, so I endangered my life, and I myself went with my men, and God allowed us to destroy the Ammonites. You see, it was a godly victory. You see, God approved of what we did. So why are you coming today to fight me? And Yiftach sees that they mean business. So Yiftach gathers the men of Gilad, and he goes to war against Ephraim. We have civil war. Yiftach with his men of the tribe of Menashe go to fight against their brethren, their cousins from the tribe of Ephraim. And the tribe, Yiftach and his men, they destroy Ephraim. And Yiftach and his men kill 42,000 Jews. Unfortunately, our history is filled with stories of Jews killing Jews. We see it over and over again. When the story of Gush Katif happened, which was a tragedy, I'm not coming to belittle it, but silly people said, the first time in Jewish history that a Jew raises a hand against a Jew. So that's pretty silly. I mean, we see throughout our history that, unfortunately, here's one example. 42,000 Jews were killed by their brethren. Civil war. So Yiftach and his men demolish the tribe of Ephraim. Now the tribe of Ephraim has crossed over the Jordan for this fight against Yiftach and his men. So when Yiftach and his men are concluding the war, they take over all the cross points of the Jordan, so you can't cross back into the land of Israel. So now whoever made it alive, whoever wasn't killed in this war, now has to get back home. They have to cross the Jordan. So Yiftach's men stand at the cross point, and every person who wants to cross, they ask him, are you from the tribe of Ephraim? And the people would say no. So they tell him, okay, tell me the word shibolet. And the tribe of Ephraim had a lisp. They couldn't say the letter shin. They'd say sin instead of shin. So the tribe of Ephraim said sibolet. And then the guards would grab him and they'd slaughter him into the water and they'd kill him. And here we see the crass nature of Yiftach. He's won the war. He's going all out. Kills out the tribe of Ephraim. And Yiftach remains the judge of the Jewish people for 6 years. And then he dies that horrid death. His limbs fall off. The Jews have had a very crass leader. We say Yiftach is the example of the lowest leader. And following Yiftach, we have a leader who... There were people left from Ephraim, but 42,000 people killed, that's quite a number. So after Yiftach, there's a famine. And when there's a famine, so there's a noble who's been helping the Jewish people, and his name is Elimelech. And this story happens during the time of Yiftach. And Elimelech is married to a woman by the name of Naomi. And Elimelech sees that there's a famine, so Elimelech goes out to the fields of Moab with his wife Naomi and his two children, Mahlon and Chilion. And when Elimelech is out there, so he passes away, and his children, Mahlon and Chilion, marry Moabite women, and they too pass away, and all his wealth is destroyed. And then Naomi says, you know, I better go back to the land of Israel. And Naomi comes back to the land of Israel, and now, after Yiftach, there is a new judge, and this judge is Boaz, and this judge is also known as Ivtzan. And Ivtzan has been praying to God, and thanks to his prayer, the famine breaks. And now there's food in the land of Israel. Now this judge, Ivtzan, he had a contemporary. There was another great sage whose name was Manoach. And Manoach had no kids. And Ivtzan had 30 sons and 30 daughters. And the custom was in ancient times that when you made a wedding, so every person who came would bring some food to the wedding, and then when you went to his wedding, you'd bring food to their wedding. So Ivtzan figures, when he marries off his kids, he figures, you know, I'm never going to pay him back. Manoach has no kids. So he never invites Manoach to his weddings, to his children's weddings. And God took note of that. God said, because he has no kids, you don't invite him to your kids' weddings. And Ivtzan was punished. All 30 sons and 30 daughters died in his lifetime. Ivtzan, all his children died. Even though he was very wealthy and he had a lot of children, they all passed away in his lifetime. That, for when we learn Megillat Rut, we'll go more in depth. Now we're just doing a quick overview. Okay. Okay. So Ivtzan is the shofet, and when Naomi comes back to the land of Israel, one of her daughters-in-law, Rus, says, I want to come back with you. And Naomi says, what you coming back for? Go back. Her sister-in-law, Orpah, turned back. She went back to her family. So Rus says, no, I want to go with you. I want to convert to Judaism. And Naomi tells her, look, it's going to be tough. You know, we have to keep Shabbos. We have all these difficult mitzvot. And Rus says, I don't care. I'm with you. Whatever happens. Even if no one will marry me because I'm a Moabite girl, I'm coming. So Naomi says, fine, if you want to come, you come. And then Rus comes back with Naomi, and they're impoverished. They have no money. And Rus goes out to collect charity from the fields. And she happens upon Boaz, the chief rabbi. He's the shofet. She happens upon his field. And in essence, Boaz is a relative of her husband's. And to make a long story short, Boaz ultimately marries Rus. Those of you who want the full story, go online and get our classes on Megillat Rut. And Boaz marries Rus and lives with her one night and passes away the next morning. He's judged the Jewish people for 7 years. But from that one night of marriage comes the child, Oved. Rus is pregnant, and even though she's lost her husband after one night of marriage, the next morning, first day of Sheva Brachos, Boaz is dead. But Rus is pregnant. And Rus has a child named Oved. And that child has a child. Her grandson is Yishai. And her great-grandson is David. So the next prophet after Yiftach is Ivtzan, otherwise known as Boaz, otherwise known as the husband of Rus, and the great-grandfather of David, the king of Israel. And Boaz... Ivtzan is only a prophet for only the judge for 7 years, and then he passes away. After him, there's a judge named Elon HaZbuloni, and after him, Avdon ben Hillel HaPiratoni. And when he passes away, what? He came from the city of Piraton. Piraton, that's the name of the city. I don't know. And after he passes away, the Jews continue sinning, and God gives them into the hands of the Philistines for 40 years. And this is where we'll pick up next week with the story of Shimshon, Samson, and the Philistines. From this point until the time of David HaMelech, the Jews are going to have an issue with the Philistines. We're up to the last Shofet in the book of Shoftim. Shimshon is the last Shofet. And Be'ezrat Hashem, we will see from here through the kingdom of King Saul until David HaMelech, we're going to have an issue with the Philistines, with the Plishtim. And that begins right now, where the Jews are given into the hands of the Plishtim for 40 years. And we will continue the story next week with Manoach, who we heard a little bit about. Manoach, who was childless, and he was an old man, together with his woman, with his wife. And the prophet, the angel that comes to them and tells them they will have a child, that child is going to be Shimshon.